Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Ty Bannerman. State officials say that 37,000 people in New Mexico could lose their eligibility for food assistance after the Trump administration starts enforcing new work requirements in April. This week, we'll be discussing the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, also known as food stamps, and how these new rules will change life for people who depend on it. And we want to hear from you. Have you applied for SNAP? How did that process go for you? How would losing food assistance or being required to work more hours impact you and your family? Give us a call at 277-KUNM. That's 277-5866 and join the conversation. Now, joining us in the studio today is Gavino Archuleta, Program Manager for SNAP here in New Mexico. Good morning, Gavino.
Good morning, Ty. How are you?
Doing fine. So these new rules, which go into effect in April, are going to implement work requirements for the SNAP Food Assistance Program. But the requirement for most adults to work 20 hours a week to remain eligible for SNAP has been around since the Clinton administration, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what exactly is changing?
So what's changing is the way that states can apply for waivers. That was one of the main focuses of this, of the rule change. New Mexico's been under a statewide waiver for many years, prior to even myself being in this position. But the administration has changed the rules to eliminate statewide waivers, mm-hmm. one, and then to add in different requirements for states to apply for waivers, such as defining rather than counties, mm-hmm. we're defining labor market areas. Labor market areas are determined by the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So we've been given guidance by FNS, the Food Nutrition Services, to look at the LMAs, the labor market areas, and determine if they are 20% above the national average for unemployment, but can be no less than 6% in that area.
So 20% above the national unemployment level, mm-hmm. but no less than 6% unemployment. How do you determine that for an area?
Well, it's actually determined for us by the Bureau of Labor Statistics.
Okay. And if that area is not able to get a waiver, then mm-hmm. who will be affected by the new rules for the work requirements or the old rules for the work requirements?
ABOD means able-bodied adults without dependents. Okay. So individuals without dependents that are able-bodied and between the ages of 18 and 49.
Okay. And they, what will they be required to do?
They're required to work 20 hours a week, average to 80 hours a month. And in that, it can be unpaid work, paid work, a combination of the both, volunteerism, and also utilizing our employment and training program. Right now, we offer a component which is voluntary supervised job search, in which they can utilize that for less than half of the hours. So 39 hours a month can be done through that. But also, part of the 2018 Farm Bill, it instituted case management as part of our employment and training. So we've actually reached out to a few of our community action agencies to refer folks to that in preparation for this. And also, the department is continuing to move and expand our employment and training program to have qualifying components to service our individuals who are subject to this work requirement.
Okay, so I understand that over 400,000 New Mexicans use SNAP. Is that correct?
Yes, that's on the rolls. Yes,
and New Mexico has been under this a statewide waiver for the work requirements for a while now. So, can you tell me who is going to be affected, or how many folks are you expecting to be affected by this this rule? The statistic I have is 37,000. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct. That is one of our latest numbers pulled by our economist.
All right. And who will be exempted?
Who will be exempted? There's multiple exemptions. The department sent out a one-time notice to the individuals who we identified as falling into this category of able-bodied adults without dependents. And within that, we sent out two of them. One of them was our one-time notice for able-bodied adults without dependents, and the other was our general work requirements for SNAP, which pretty much goes over all of our work provisions, because there's mm-hmm. three work provisions within the SNAP program. There's general work requirements, our employment and training program, as well as the ABOD time limit. So the exemptions are listed. I mean, if you're under the age of 18 or you're over the age of 50 or older, if you're getting disability benefits, if you're unable to work 20 hours a week, even if you're applying for disability benefits, having a pending application for it, we're going to take a statement from a medical provider or whoever's caring for you to determine your disability to exempt you from that. Also, if you're pregnant, there's a few others. Chronically homeless, if someone's chronically homeless, and there's a definition that's been given to our staff mm-hmm. with clear guidance as to what that is for individuals. I mean, if you're unfit to work, If you're a parent of the household member age 18, if you're living with someone who's age 18, if you're living in an area under a waiver, and also if you're exempt from SNAP general work requirements. So those two kind of play together.
Okay. Now, I'd like to welcome into this conversation Sofia Martinez. She is the co-coordinator of the Los Jardines Institute in Albuquerque's South Valley. So, Sofia, how exactly do the SNAP work requirements affect people living in an area like the South Valley community?
Well, I think in multiple ways, right? We have a small farm where we use a lot of volunteer work. We have people that basically receive SNAP and they go in and do volunteer work at the garden for those work requirements, right? Which I'll comment on those in a while. But I think there's also all kinds of issues. There's people sometimes that are in broken families. Maybe the father's not living in the household and he may apply for food stamps and they contribute that to the family, right? People contribute that to the grandparents that are taking kids if the family is having issues. There's also unintended consequences. We're small farmers and we participate in farmers markets in the summer, right? Through SNAP, you can also get double up bucks to buy produce, basically, from stores like La Montanita or any store, basically, and farmers markets. So that basically is impacting farmers also if you can sell twice as many vegetables to someone, right? The families, basically, that's impacting them because they get a 50% cut on the kind of fruits and vegetables that they could get for their families. And, of course, that impacts on the nutrition of kids that are going to school. And so there's a multitude of unintended consequences that impact everybody, right? And I think those are major, major issues. I really have a problem with that experience that we had with the woman that was working with us to pay off the food stamps, basically. It's like I really think it hinders people's ability to find employment when you're basically hooked up with that kind of a requirement.
Okay, we are taking your comments today. Are you on SNAP and unemployed? Can you tell us about your situation and what losing SNAP eligibility would mean for you? Let us know at 277-5866 or email us at letstalk@kunm.org or tweet to the hashtag #LetsTalkNewMexico. So, Gavino, I want to go back to you and ask, why do you think the federal government is making it harder to waive these work rules?
Well, it's just guidance that we're given by the federal government. Secretary Sonny Perdue has put multiple comments out there about bringing back the integrity of the program and strengthening the program.
Okay, what does that mean, in bringing back the integrity of the program?
In all reality, in articles that I've read, other states, and this is coming from the government, right, from the federal government, that some states have abused waivers or have abused those loopholes to get away with those. But again, New Mexico has always had a firm stance on statewide waiver and not implementing these rules.
Okay. And I believe the idea is to incentivize employment on some level. Sofia, can you comment on whether or not you see this as working to incentivize employment?
I really don't see it. What is being done to incentivize more jobs, right? So I really think we are really under, I think, a time in our history in this country and elsewhere where we're just experiencing a disregard, basically, for poor and marginalized people. We have, since World War II, a distance between, let's say, directors and CEOs of organizations. World War II was like 35%. Today, it's 350%. So the 1%, and it's not really the 1%. There's a whole 25% that historically has really been making bank on people's poverty. And in a lot of ways, I think, you know, we're still living under a monarchy and a dynasty, and the peasantry is just, we may build all the infrastructure of this country and all our countries and provide those types of services that basically make the rich stay rich, yet the rich basically are becoming so greedy that, you know, there's no sense of really supporting people that are really contribute to the society. And I think under this administration, especially this president, we've seen that hatred of other people really impact. And things are coming down in its government, but I think we have a responsibility as citizens, as people in whether it be educational institutions, etc. Today, 50% you know, a shortage in teaching staff. That's mm-hmm. not new. I'm a retired teacher. That's been an issue in the country and in New Mexico for a long time. But, and again, how does nutrition impact that? In terms, you're going to have less qualified teachers, no teachers, and then you have hungry kids mm-hmm. and families that are being disrupted. And then we wonder why crime and mm-hmm. all these things, when people become desperate, you know, there's a lot of stuff that contributes.
As a part of a system that is contributing to people maybe needing SNAP in the first place, really. So let's talk a little bit more about the nuts and bolts of things like the waiver, I think, because there's a lot of confusion around the issue. We had the statewide waiver, and that is coming to an end in March, correct, Governor?
Coming to an end February 29th.
Okay. And so what is going to happen after March?
Well, again, we sent out the one-time notice, and that's a statutory requirement to send it out 45 days prior to implementation. That was out on January 15th. And at that point, we've already let folks know, and people have been coming to our offices mm-hmm. and asking questions. So we're advising them as to what the work requirements are, what the exemptions are if they may meet one, mm-hmm. and also how they can comply. So effective March 1, that's when the ABOD rule comes into effect, mm-hmm. and the combo months will start happening. And I don't know how versed you are within it, but essentially, SNAP recipients who fall under the ABOD work requirement will have 3 months of SNAP eligibility without having to comply. Mm-hmm. And after that, they will be closed. Their case will be closed.
And there is a move to get some waivers for these labor market areas.
Yes, we have identified some labor market areas as well as our mm-hmm. some tribal lands to waive the requirements for those. Right now, they still are proposed. So until it's finalized and approved mm-hmm. by the federal government, I can't really share which areas they are.
Right. There will be some sort of notification for folks who are in those areas?
Yes, sir. Okay. Exactly. Once we get approval from FNS, we will be notifying folks, and notifying the field offices, again, the county directors for those offices mm-hmm. that may be waived, as well as the clientele which we've identified that fall in that geographical area.
And if these waivers go through, mm-hmm. say all of them, will all the people who may lose their food assistance, the 37,000 that we mentioned at the top of the hour, will they all be eligible again for continued food assistance, or is it going to be some and not others?
Some and not others. The way the waivers work is, you know, for your physical location of that waived area. So if I live in, you know, for example, I'll just say, I'm not going to even say a county. Mm-hmm. I live in a county that's waived. And at that point, my physical address is there, so I don't have to comply for that work requirement okay. right now. So it's really just based upon your physical location as to where you're living. Mm-hmm. And that will actually show the wave piece of it. And our system's already been set up. We've done multiple system changes to ensure that we're doing this the best we can. We've worked with our food nutrition services, with our federal partner. They've gone over a management evaluation with us and reviewed our system, reviewed everything. So the department's doing everything they're legally obligated to do mm-hmm. to follow this rule.
Okay. And what percentage of people currently seeking food assistance in New Mexico already do work 20 hours a week or more?
And that one, I wasn't okay. briefed on that question prior, so I don't want to give
sure.
an arbitrary number.
Okay. And what about, I mean, do you think that there's a fair wage question if people are, say, working 20 hours a week for no pay, like you say, or volunteering? Mm-hmm. Does this become a question of them losing wages from another source of employment or something like that?
Well, essentially, we're going to take whatever anyone's doing. Mm-hmm. If, like I said again, unpaid work, paid work, volunteerism, that's laid out in the federal guidance in the rule. We can utilize if they're doing an employment and training program. Mm-hmm. And again, like I said, the department is looking to expand our components through our employment and training program to assist and to service our ABOD population.
Okay. Some people, you know, we talked about the incentivization question here, but you say that you are going to be doing some case management. What is that going to look like?
Well, the case management piece looks like just assisting folks, right? Because we've been given referred folks who aren't even work ready, mm-hmm. right? So we're referring these community action agencies to learn some soft skills, to teach them, okay, you can go to school. Mm-hmm. You can get your GED. Let's move towards this path. And at that point, they're doing something, right? Mm-hmm. They're working with the community action agencies to better their situation. Because again, I'm not going to tell you to work when you're not even work ready. I mean, mm-hmm. if you're facing housing insecurity, still food insecurity, and we're doing our best. I mean, the department is doing everything we can to ensure that this is a smooth transition and that the impact isn't drastic.
Okay, this is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM. I'm Ty Bannerman. Do you think that this shows a disregard for people's well-being from the federal government? And for that matter, should a few people be able to accumulate large amounts of wealth while others go hungry? Give us a call with your thoughts. Call 277-5866, and we are going to be taking a quick break.
Support comes from Rothstein Donatelli Law Firm, whose criminal practice can help clients petition state courts to permanently remove public records related to criminal charges and certain convictions, beginning January 1, 2020. RothsteinLaw.com.
Support comes from Dose of Reality about opioids, recognizing that historical trauma within Native American communities puts them at higher risk for developing addictions. Dose of Reality is a resource to help fight against addiction. More at doseofreality.com.
I was lucky to hear the American premiere of this piece, the Violin Concerto by Jaco Kuusisto. I came away elated and astonished and dying to hear it again. Can't wait to share it with you. Elena Vahala solos with the Minnesota Orchestra. I'm Fred Gild. Join me for the next Performance Today from APM.
Weekday mornings at 9 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Ty Bannerman. We are discussing changes to the SNAP or food stamps system, and we're taking your comments. Now, I'd like to welcome into the conversation Jill Beetz, the Vice President of Marketing and Communications with Adelante Development Center and The Storehouse, New Mexico's largest food pantry. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning.
Now, how do you foresee this change to SNAP eligibility affecting the folks that you work with?
Well, as you said, the Storehouse is the largest food pantry in the state of New Mexico. We feed about 53,000 people a year currently. In our research on this topic, the thing is that nationally, Feeding America says that for every meal that food pantries like the Storehouse are providing, 9 are being provided by SNAP benefits. So, frankly, it makes us a little nervous to think about, you know, if there are 37,000 people across New Mexico that could be affected, and that would be about 19,000 in Bernalillo County, our service area, that could mean another 9 million meals or more that we would have to provide. And there is no way that local food pantries could sustain that effort. I mean, we struggle to be able to provide the 2 million meals a year we do annually. So to think that all of a sudden this burden will transfer from the federal government to charities is a little nerve-wracking to think about. And then the timeline is also going to be tough for food pantries. The thing is this, you know, the rule effect takes place is, March the 1st. However, people have a 3-month time period, which means it's going to hit the summertime. That is a time when families have more expenses as far as, if kids are in school and then all of a sudden they're having to pay for daycare or summer camps. We have greater numbers come through our doors in the summer. And then we also have lower volunteerism because people are going on vacations, and we have lower donations of food drives. So it's going to hit at a bad time for food pantries, I think.
Now, a lot of the people that you work with are disabled or senior citizens. That's through the Adelante Center, both of which are groups that are exempted from SNAP work requirements. But are they going to be in the clear from being impacted by these new rules, do you think?
I believe so. I think the extended impact may be from if more working age adults begin to turn to the Storehouse. For example, we feed a lot of seniors right now. A lot of people, you know, are struggling being able to pay for their prescriptions and their food, right? So we have a lot of seniors, and then we have a lot of seniors that are raising, due to the opioid crisis and other drug addiction issues, a lot of seniors are raising their grandkids. So they come and they feed their families with the Storehouse. How it works is at the Storehouse and most food pantries is we're completely dependent upon people either giving us donations of money or food, and that's what we have available to give away. If we suddenly have more people, it's not like more food necessarily materializes, right? I mean, if people donate more to us, then we can feed more people. Otherwise, what happens is everyone that shows up gets a little less food. You know what I mean? So it could have a ripple effect across that population.
And I understand that SNAP actually impacts communities, as you're saying, in ways just beyond the person who receives the assistance. Do you have a sense for how this change could affect, say, a small grocery store?
I think local, like the small local grocery stores may struggle mm-hmm. with that, because the thing is, we have so many people that are going, we are one of the worst in the nation for hunger right now. We are second in the nation for childhood hunger, and we're within the top five for adult hunger as well. Huge swaths of our population are wondering where their next meal is going to come from now, even with the numbers of people participating in SNAP. So what happens is people just begin to go without food, they skip meals, and then they're already in a situation where they're making tough choices, like, do they pay for food or do they pay for apartments? Do they pay for food? Do they pay for medical care? Can they pay their utilities? Can they pay for their transportation, or is their car going to get taken away? I mean, and the thing is, so the small grocery stores are going to be affected because people can't afford to buy food. They will literally just be going without. But I also see the issue where we already struggled with, you know, we're one of the worst in the nation here in the Albuquerque metro area with a homeless issue. You know, people are experiencing homelessness. If this can, you know, if this rule takes effect, more people who are choosing between buying food and paying for their housing may end up homeless.
Okay, we have a call from Carly in Albuquerque who has a question for us. Good morning, Carly.
Hi, good morning. I was just calling, I guess you guys have touched on it a little bit, but the impact of the disabled people in the community that are already receiving SNAP benefits. Mm-hmm. And if those numbers are going to go down, you know, or if they will be impacted at all. I know when they had a welfare to work quite a few years ago, it did impact the disabled people, and a lot of them had to reapply, even though they've been disabled for years.
Okay, that sounds like a good question for Gavina. What is your take on Carly's question?
Well, our disabled population won't be affected. Okay. That's one of the exemptions. I mean, again, it's applying for receiving, even just visually apparent to our caseworkers. If someone's disabled and if they claim to be disabled and it's apparent to us, or if they can provide a statement of disability, that's an exemption for this work requirement. Okay. So I don't see that as a major impact.
Certainly. And I have another call from Jack in Santa Fe. Good morning, Jack. What is your question or comment?
Good morning, Ty. Thanks for having me. My comment is really, you know, this plan seems practical on the face, but the reality is that there are a lot of people who haven't been diagnosed. That, you know, transportation costs are there for people who have little to no money. Also, child care costs to cover this. And it seems like when people will go to volunteer positions, you're kind of placing the burden in this plan on the organization to be efficient, to be organized, and to be ready to handle an influx of people where they may have not had that influx of people. You know, so from a public point of view, it seems like a good idea, but in its application, you know, we can see some backlog already happening. And, yeah.
Okay, Sophia, your organization, Los Jardines, has had people who are on SNAP doing their work requirements before, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So what was your experience? Did you find that there were issues with childcare and transportation for people who were fulfilling their obligations that way?
Well, in this particular case, it was a grandma that was helping out. But, you know, there were a lot of kids. So, again, it's a burden on the whole family. And again, I just think that when people are having to work 20 hours or 80 hours minimum a month, that creates a real problem in terms of your ability to be able to seek a job. If you're not getting money, you're doing volunteer work, how are you going to put gas in the car? And again, if you don't have a grandma, which we know basically across this country, grandparents are taking care of a lot of children, whether it be white, black, brown, or red, whatever, right? So I think that, you know, we really don't understand a lot of times the decision makers really don't understand what's going on in reality, because it's really easy to be in your office and just kind of think about statistics. And we do a lot of work with environmental stuff, right? Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the environmental stuff is the same thing as the food stuff. As regulations get lessened up or decreased, well, that creates ripple effects in all kinds of ways that I don't think the people in their offices and I don't think in Washington right now they care. I think that there's just a general disregard, you know, this idea that, oh, people just don't want to work because they're lazy. I don't think that people are lazy. I think that people that, obviously, if you're part of the 1% or 25%, maybe you should be paying your workers, the people that clean your house, clean your bathrooms, paint your houses, do all those things, take care of your kids. Maybe they should be earning a livable wage at the minimum 15. And we could probably debate about whether even $15 an hour is a good wage. But that's not even the federal. What's the federal minimum wage now?
Right.
Seven something, right?
I'm not sure. I don't have that right with me, but I would like to welcome Sherry Hooper into the conversation at this point. She is the executive director of the Food Depot, which is a food bank in Santa Fe. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you?
We're doing very well. I had a question for you about, as the director of a food bank, do you think that food banks and pantries will be able to pick up the additional meals that are required for people who are losing their SNAP eligibility?
I think that it will be a great struggle for the food banks. And just to fill people in, food banks are, there are five food banks in New Mexico that make up the New Mexico Association of Food Banks. And those five food banks work with about 500 different nonprofit food programs in all 33 counties of the state. And as a food bank, we work to bring food donations in, and then we provide those nonprofit food programs with the food they need. So they could be emergency food pantries, soup kitchens, shelters. There are really quite a large variety of agencies that receive help from their local food bank. And the Food Depot is the food bank that we're headquartered in Santa Fe, but we serve nine counties in northern New Mexico. I will tell you that food banks are at capacity in this state. We have such a high rate of food insecurity. I believe someone mentioned earlier, there are about 324,000 people in New Mexico that are food insecure, and one in four of our children, which is horrifying to me to imagine that any child would go to bed hungry in this state. But we are at capacity. We've found that some of our more traditional food sources are beginning to dry up, and that's mostly in large food companies. For example, when they have overproduced food or they've made a mistake in production or something like that, what they can do is they can donate that food into the food bank system in the country. And that those sources actually have been so good to the food banks for such a very long time. But as they improve their efficiencies, they're making fewer mistakes, which means, of course, that there are fewer donations going to the food banks. And this is happening at the same time that we're seeing this rule change with SNAP.
So there's a lot of big changes that are affecting your ability to provide foods for hungry people?
That is right. And I really think it's important to point out that we now have an administration in New Mexico that is paying very close attention to hunger and to poverty in the state and is really looking to make some major changes to eliminate poverty. I mean, we know if we eliminate poverty, hunger will go away because hunger is a symptom of poverty. But our governor is making some really wise choices in terms of childcare, transportation, job training, all the things that are desperately needed in the state to take people off of the food stamp rolls and really help them to be prepared to go into the workforce.
Now, I have a call from Cheryl in Albuquerque. Good morning, Cheryl.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I would just like to know, I heard the speaker from the storehouse explaining that they receive donations. I'm not sure about this, but I was under the impression that they do receive some of the food from Roadrunner Food Bank, and I'd just like to know how the other nonprofits, how that food goes from Roadrunner to the other food bank or outlets here in Albuquerque. Thank you very much.
Okay, Jill.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think before I got involved in food, I had the same question. I didn't understand the difference between, like, a food bank and a food pantry. So we do work very cooperatively with the food bank in our community, which is Roadrunner, and they are a huge help to us. Just like Food Depot provides food to food pantries across Northern New Mexico, Roadrunner does food in this in Bernalillo County, and they do provide a big portion of the food that is distributed through the storehouse as well as other local pantries. So the food, yeah, they're the bank, and then we're the pantries, and the pantries do more of the actual handing out of food, but they collect the food and distribute it to the food pantries is sort of roughly how it works.
Now, Jill and Sherry, I'd like to put this this question to both of you. If people are fearing that they're going to lose their eligibility for SNAP, or if they are, in fact, going through a period of need for food, even at this point, how can they find help in the different parts of New Mexico? So, Sherry, how about in northern New Mexico? How can they find help for food?
They should definitely call the Food Depot, and I can give that number. It's 505-471-1633, and we will find a way to get them help. There are a couple of ways, just to piggyback a little bit on that last question. Mm-hmm. There are a couple of ways that the food banks get the food, actual food, to those nonprofit food programs like Storehouse, for example. One is we deliver to communities, or we deliver to our partner. We call them partner agencies because, of course, we're a team. We're a network of hunger relief organizations. And another is through our mobile food pantry distribution. And that's an important one, especially for some of our rural communities. So there are lots of those distributions going on in rural communities all around the state. And they're at various times and days. So they would need to call their local food bank to find out when those distributions are being done.
Okay. And Jill, if people are going through a period of food insecurity or worried about the future, what can they do in, say, central New Mexico?
Right. So we are located on Broadway, just south of Central in downtown Albuquerque. And we're open Wednesday through Saturday, 9 to noon. People simply just need to come, get in line. They bring an ID and then documents showing that they're responsible, you know, how many kids are in their household and that kind of thing. They must bring that like the first time they come get food. And after that, they can come one time a month. It's like a grocery experience. We try and make it as much you know, provide people as much dignity as possible. They choose all of their own food. It's not like we pack a box and give it to people. They pick the things that their family is interested in eating, so there's no food waste in it. Like they know what kind of soup their family likes, or they know that their child is, you know, everyone in their family is lactose intolerant, so they wouldn't take any cheese, right? But we have fresh produce and meats as well as, you know, what people traditionally think of things like canned goods and shelf-stable things. We do have a lot of produce and fresh things as well. If they want to see when, if they have more questions about how to get food, they can visit storehousenm.org. It's a great resource for information. And I just want to add in, too, if people are curious if they still qualify for SNAP or if they've never signed up, and they're kind of hearing about these changes and thinking, well, I've never taken advantage of this program. Adelante also does offer a benefits connection center that they can call 505-273-5222 across the state. If you're a senior or you are a person with a disability, they will actually run you through a benefits checkup and tell you every government benefit you're eligible to receive. So even if you are receiving SNAP, if you would qualify for things like help, like LIHEAP, which is help with your energy assistance, like your utilities, or Medicaid or Medicare, then we can also help you apply for those things. We'll tell you the, you know, the amount you would get for those things, and then people can choose what they need help applying for. But we can help them apply for other benefits that might offset the loss of their SNAP.
And to add to these great resources that my guests have provided, I want to say that you can also call Roadrunner Food Bank, their food assistance line at 505-349-5340, Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and the operator will connect you with help in any part of New Mexico, and they will base it on your location. So we are talking about SNAP and changes to the SNAP or food stamps system. You're listening to Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM, and we're taking your calls. Do you think it's possible to eliminate poverty altogether? What do you want the government or state lawmakers to do about food insecurity? Give us a call, 277-5866. tweet to us using the hashtag #LetsTalkNM or email letstalk@kunm.org. We will be back in a moment.
Support comes from the New Mexico Philharmonic, presenting cellist Andre Yonitsa as soloist in Elgar's Cello Concerto and Mahler's Symphony No. 7, 6 p.m. Saturday the 15th at Popejoy Hall. Tickets and info at nmphil.org.
Support for KUNM provided by The Independent, a locally owned newspaper covering the East Mountains and Estancia Valley with news, sports, and features, celebrating 20 years in print, online at edgewood.news or on Facebook and Twitter.
This edition of AR features William Barber on why Iowa matters.
But it's not just we need Iowa because of the problem, but we need a sound to come out of Iowa. This nation's got to hear from Iowa that Iowa has something to say about poverty and low wealth. It was told when Franklin Delano Roosevelt pushed the New Deal. The same line was told in 1935.
That's Alternative Radio, Saturday night at 6 on KUNM.
Now, in the studio today with us is Sovereign Hager, the legal director for the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty. Good morning, Sovereign.
Good morning.
So your organization has been working on issues surrounding food justice and other sorts of poverty issues in the state for years. What do you think is broken about the system here?
Well, I think it's really important to remember that we have as a value that no one in this country should go hungry, which is why we created the SNAP program. It was a bipartisan program. That legislation continues to be bipartisan every year. And the very changes that the Trump administration is proposing were rejected by Congress in the last farm bill. So it's really an end run around that. And I want to say, you know, it's really a misnomer to call it a work requirement because it does not provide anyone with employment or increased income. It is a penalty. And it's a limit on food assistance that people can receive and ultimately locks them out for up to almost 3 years from receiving those benefits. And we know that this administration really has had a war on low-income folks, everyday people. The tax cuts for the top 1% would have funded the entire SNAP program. So, you know, what we're looking at here is a real intrusion into people's lives to have to document that they're disabled, which is a barrier, having to document that they're doing unpaid work in the community just in order to have enough to eat. And we don't see those kind of intrusions, of course, or that kind of rigor around corporate welfare or tax cuts for the top 1%. That's broken.
Well, can we go and go back to what you said about how Congress had rejected these changes? I understand that there were several problems with the way that this new rule came about. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So what the administration is proposing, and this was brought up in the debate around the farm bill, is to really eliminate state flexibility in implementing this very harsh penalty of a 3-month limit on food assistance. And states have always had this flexibility, especially because of different circumstances in each state. In New Mexico, we have sovereign tribal nations. We have rural communities with unique needs. And our state needs to be able to respond to those and seek waivers of these federal rules so that they can maintain the purpose of the SNAP program and ensure folks have access to that nutritional assistance. What this does is cuts out that flexibility, and it was rejected by Congress. And what was proposed by the Trump administration, just like other proposals, was really harsh and eliminated that flexibility. And then we saw the final rule even had differences from what was proposed, didn't respond to comments. You know, there were a large number of comments about impacts to the federal government on tribal communities in particular. The federal government ignored that. That's actually not allowed. And I think that's why we're seeing legal challenges to this rule.
So we are seeing some legal challenges. Can you tell me a little bit about those?
Sure. So several states' attorney generals have filed a lawsuit seeking to stop this rule from going into effect. I think it's possible we'll see more. And really, the basis is that this is illegal, violates sort of the legislative intent of the program, and was not done in a way that the executive has authority to operate to create rules mm-hmm. around food assistance, which is a program created by Congress.
So we've talked a lot about like a system that has led people to the point where they need SNAP, and maybe SNAP is a part of the system that needs to change, but also are there other ways that the government can address the situation so that people maybe don't get to the point that they need SNAP?
Absolutely. I mean, and the communities in New Mexico have been talking directly to leaders for a long time about this, especially folks engaged in groups like Jardines and Southwest Organizing Project, La Semilla, that are really involved in the forefront of food justice for communities in New Mexico, have been really clear that if we're serious about addressing barriers to opportunity for folks, eliminating poverty, that's really about increasing the minimum wage, having fair wages, making sure people have help with things like childcare, access to, meals in school, no barriers to food assistance, access to affordable health care options. These are things folks have been raising with the government for a long time. We know what works. We know what lifts up our communities and these type of penalties. Punishing people who are already disenfranchised by the system is not an answer.
Okay, we are taking your calls this morning. How have you or your family been affected by poverty or food insecurity? How is the SNAP system broken in your perspective? We still have time to hear from you this morning. Give us a call at 277-5866. And I have a question from Veronica in Los Lunas. Good morning, Veronica.
Good morning. I wanted to know if the people that are doing this wonderful work of providing food for people, do they have a connection to the Human Services Department that shows when these people that get the benefits got them, and how soon thereafter are they going to the pantry? My concern is more so of nobody. I don't think anybody wants to take food from children. I just can't see where anybody would do that. But the abuse of the system is very real. I was just in a store a couple of weeks back, and the gentleman kind of following me around. It was only myself and the lady running the store and him. He approached me and asked me how I was paying for my merchandise. And I paid cash. And he says to me, can I, my EBT card to pay for that, and you give me the cash? I need money for gas. I was shocked. I said, absolutely not. That mm-hmm. is illegal. And no, the lady in the store said, absolutely not. She's like, not only is that illegal, I could lose my license. Okay. And he walked out and left through the parking lot. I was afraid to leave.
So, Sovereign, this is an interesting question. Do you think that abuse is so rampant in the system that we need to make changes like the one that the Trump administration is suggesting to save money?
Short answer is no, but I'm glad the caller raised it because I think this is, people run into an example of this and there's a pervasive belief that this is very common. And what the data shows is that actually SNAP is one of the most, has some of the highest program integrity of any type of program like this in the country. The rates of misuse, and Gavino could chime in here too, are below 1%. Mm-hmm. And we know that the other important point the caller made is how soon are people needing to go to food banks? People are having to go to food banks within 2 weeks of getting food assistance, at least. The majority of people run out because the benefit is very low, and it's set at a federal level. So that benefit runs out, and they need food assistance. In fact, 3/4 of people on food assistance visit food pantries every month. And so we know the benefit is too small. The program has a ton of integrity. And the rates of fraud or misuse are some of the lowest of any program like this in the country. The bigger issue is that people still don't have enough to eat.
Okay, thank you. So I wanted to ask Sophia, it looked like you had a comment about the caller as well.
Well, I think, you know, there's so much misinformation in this country, and people just don't really look at, don't do the research or don't even read it, right? And, you know, that's one thing that's very inflammatory towards the public. Oh, people are ripping off this program. And again, if we really look at it, there's no one ripping off. And quite frankly, yeah, it's real easy to be judgmental about people wanting to maybe put gas in the car to get to a job and trying to, that may be illegal to you if you're going, you know, it's whatever, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like, let's look at that kind of dishonesty in what's happening right now in our White House and in our Congress. The type of, you know, it's just incredible to me what people jump on in terms of like, oh, this is so criminal, and look at what they're ripping off, when in reality, you know, we can look at so many just government officials that are ripping off much more than even what's going on with food stamps. And it's not only just in food stamps. I was taking care of my elderly parent, and we had a program through the Disabled and Elderly Waiver called the MeVia program, where families can actually control the thing that's basically supplementing that elder, right? Well, I called about it for someone that really needed it, a family, and I was trying to hook them up with that. And they said, oh, no, we did away with that because there's a lot of theft in that program. And a lot of, and I was thinking, how? And I mean, it's just drives me crazy to think with the MeVia program, we were actually able to pay someone $10 an hour for doing elder care. Up to, at that point, the limit was $13 an hour, right? So it created a livable, I don't even know if to call it a livable wage at that point. But when you destroyed that program, then everyone has to go to AmberCare or any of those organizations that provide that care for elder people, right? Well, they get paid minimum wage. So how is that going to provide security for the person taking care of the elder when you're underpaid? People nowadays, when you're underpaid, you're not going to provide the care that people need, or you're just not going to provide the client service that you're, because you're angry about the fact that you're getting paid $7 an hour and having to do all this stuff, right? And it's really you know, the sense of democracy and equity and fairness really is kind of needs to be reexamined, I think, as a people, as a humanity in this country. We really need to reflect, you know what I'm saying? I think it's a real crime when people can go to church or their particular places of worship and then leave there and just be judgmental about stuff that people don't have any control over. And quite frankly, those in power are creating that situation. And there's more theft by the 1% than there could ever be by the marginalized.
And I have another call from Lee in Albuquerque. Good morning, Lee. What is your comment or question?
Hello.
Hi, Lee. We have you on the air. What is your comment or question about today's conversation?
I just want to comment about, I know a lot of people, like, for instance, my neighbor. She's epileptic, so she can't drive, and she obviously can't work. And her food stamps went down from over $100 to $14 a month. So, you know.
Yes.
They're doing a good job in Washington.
So, Gavino, you know, if somebody faces a situation like this where they feel like their SNAP benefits have been taken away or reduced unfairly, is there something that they can do about it?
They can always file a fair hearing with our administrative law judge, with the department. If you feel that your benefits are not being calculated correctly, you can always reach out to the department and file a fair hearing and question as to why and to how. And we're there to educate you and to show you exactly how we determine the eligibility and the level at which the allotment comes out. Again, to echo what Sovereign said, these are set at a federal level.
Mm-hmm.
So we're held to federal guidelines as to how we determine eligibility.
Okay. Now, I have an email comment from Elaine who says that it's hard to find healthy food in pantries, and most of it isn't tolerable on diets, especially for the elderly. She says there should be more food programs in schools, like farm-to-table programs. Sherry, can you maybe address the quality of the food that is, you know, found in pantries and other places of that nature?
Absolutely. The food banks actually are committed to providing more fresh fruits and vegetables. In fact, at the Food Depot, one of our goals is to have at least half of our distribution in fruits and vegetables, and we've reached that goal. We're also working very hard to get more protein into the food bank and out to food pantries and kitchens and shelters.
our goal there is 15%. And I just would share that it's a little bit of a joke because food banks, we struggle to get enough protein into the food banks because it's almost like gold. It's so hard to access for us. So as more of the food banks are doing more purchasing of food, we actually have an opportunity there to really target the most nutritious food we can. And so that's what we're doing with our purchase program is doing that. We have we really try very hard, too, to work with all of our food donors and to accept all the food that they donate. And keep in mind, locally, that food comes from a lot of grocery stores, for example. They are so good to their food banks. They, when they pull food off the shelves because it's reached that date of stamp, you know, sell by, that food is perfectly good. A lot of that will then go to the food banks. We accept all that they donate. And sometimes there are donations of cookies and cupcakes, but actually that's a very small percentage of what is received by the food banks from local food donors. We're also working very hard to make sure we capture or rescue all the food that farmers and farmers markets have available to donate. So we, and if I could, we have two memorials that are going through the Senate that are sponsored by Senator Nancy Rodriguez. One is to take a look at gleaning in the fields. It will set up a working group to do that because we understand that there are farmers that leave food in the fields and plow it under simply because it's too expensive for them to pick it, package it, okay, and take it to market.
So we do have I have a question from a caller that we want to get to, right, because we are coming up at the end of the program. So I'm sorry, I'm going to have to cut you off there, Sherry. But Devin, you have a question for us in Albuquerque?
Oh, hello. Am I on?
You are on. What is your question today?
So I had a question about with the new laws and SNAP benefits. I and several of my friends go to school full time, and I know a couple of them have already lost their SNAP benefits. With these like new laws, is there any way to receive SNAP while going to school full time?
Gavino?
At that point, there is a college student. There's college student rules as well as ABLE rules, which are different. But to qualify to be a qualified college student, there has to be, like, let's say they're receiving work study. Let's say receiving federal work study. At that point, they're working 20 hours a week. There's other areas in which they can qualify to become an eligible college student. If you have any questions, they can always go into the HSD offices and inquire about that.
Okay, and Sovereign, I wanted to ask you real quick if you had any final thoughts as we're coming up to the end of the program here, just real fast.
Sure. So I think it's really important for folks to know whether they are exempt or even subject to these rules and to pay attention to the notices they receive from the department and utilize the notice of rights at the back that includes legal resources if you need them. And then, you know, really encourage the state to fund programs that help people ensure they have benefits, stay engaged with your community groups that are fighting the good fight out there and lifting up the voices of people impacted by these rules.
Okay, and that is all the time that we have today. Thank you so much to everyone who called in to share your thoughts. Thanks so much to our guests, who were Gavino Archuleta, the SNAP Program Manager with the State of New Mexico's Human Services Department, Jill Beetz, Vice President of Marketing and Communication with Adelante Development Center and the Food Depot, the Storehouse, Sherry Hooper, Executive Director of the Food Depot in Santa Fe, Sovereign Hager, Legal Director of the New Mexico Center for Law and Poverty, and Sofia Martinez, co-coordinator of the Los Jardines Institute. Let's keep this conversation going. Share your thoughts on Twitter, hashtag Let's Talk NM. Look us up on Facebook, search for KUNM Radio, or you can email us at letstalk@kunm.org. If you missed part of the show, you can stream it online or subscribe to our podcast, which you can find wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Our engineer is Marino Spencer. Taylor Velasquez screened your calls. Bryce Dix live tweeted the show today. Hannah Colton produced the show, and Marisa DeMarco is our executive producer. I'm Ty Bannerman. This is Let's Talk New Mexico on 89.9 KUNM.